I'm Up to Outthink. I'm Lawrence Akers, clinical hypnotherapist, member of the LGBT community, and passionate about mental health and mental wellness. In this episode of Outthink, we have Chris Bell as our guest. Now, Chris is a life coach. His mission is to make personal development as normal and talked about as personal training. And in this episode of Outthink, we talk about everything from aging, self-image, living with purpose, and relationship matters. So sit back, enjoy this episode of Outthink with Chris Bell. Chris, thanks for coming along and chatting today.
Thank you for having me.
Start a little bit about talking about your coaching business first, and discussing, I guess, how you know the LGBT community can benefit from coaching.
Sure. So I'm a life coach. Mm-hmm. I also describe myself as a gay life coach because a significant proportion of my clients are LGBT, mainly gay men. That's partly because I brand myself as a LGBT / gay life coach, and partly also because that seems to be the people that I attract and the people I love working with. What I do as a coach, I guess, in a nutshell, I help people understand where it is that they are right now, but most importantly, where it is that they want to go to instead. And then my role as a coach is to be the questioner, to help people explore and unpack some of the issues that are blocking them from getting to where it is that they want to go to. And then actually very practically as well, to come up with an action plan and be an accountability partner, being somebody there who doesn't necessarily crack the whip, but at least somebody who takes notes and who remembers, like, oh, actually, you said you were going to do this. What happened? What are the reasons that it didn't happen, or whatever that is? So, in a nutshell, that's a little bit what I do. The coaching that I do with my LGBT clients is actually very similar, if not exactly the same, as what I do with my non-LGBT clients. But the topics tend to be similar, but there are some recurring themes there that I come across, especially with gay men. Actually, things around friendship seems to be a really big one, linking in with elements of loneliness, isolation, social isolation. Mm-hmm. That's a big one, actually, and purpose as well. I mean, the element of purpose, of leading a meaningful life, is something that's a big topic that comes across actually for most of my clients, but it seems to take a different direction actually for gay clients, is my experience at least.
Yeah, can you elaborate a little bit on more, and in what way does it take a different direction?
Well, it's interesting because I refer to them as my straight clients, but they most of them have children, and I always think actually that in itself, yes, you can talk about meaning and purpose, but I think there's your purpose right there for a lot of them at least, and now for some of them that's not quite enough, which is fair enough, but at least that there's a kind of baseline, and I do think people might disagree, but I think it is a little bit easier actually if you identify as straight and you kind of there's a template there that you can follow. You might not necessarily be happy with it, you can stray from it, you can always go back to it if you want to, and I think there's much less of a LGBT template of what it means to lead a meaningful life. So it very much falls onto our own shoulders, not to the shoulders of society or religion or our community, to decide what gives us meaning, what gives us purpose. And I think it is a very big question. I mean, how do I find my purpose is a question that comes back a lot. And I think people that look at it as this really big concept, purpose with a capital P, you know, this kind of divine reason why we were put on this earth, and that, you know, we spend most of our lives trying to figure out what it is. But actually, the way I look at it is this far more simple. It's about what you can do with your time that's important.
Yeah.
Important to you, important to your community, important to the wider world. And so it's about unpacking basically what that then looks for an individual. Now, for some people, that might be could be things around volunteering. For other people, they find their purpose in their job, in the contribution that they make. For other people, it might be around children. So purpose is a big one, and I do think it comes up more for us in the LGBT community than for others. Also, not in the least, because there are so many competing. It's so easy as well when you're LGBT to kind of get stuck in that, the perpetual, I don't know, Peter Pan, having fun, hanging out. And I think for most of us, at some point, that has been the case. But it stops being interesting. It stops being fun, even.
It's funny because I'm thinking off the top of my head now of a friend of mine who, he's in his early 40s, and posted something the other day about having been out, getting too drunk on a school night, for want of a better term. And then the next morning posting something on Facebook about, he has to remember he can't keep doing this. And I probably cheekily said, yes, we have to remember we are approaching middle age. Therefore, we need to remember that we are not as young as we used to be, and that these things aren't going to have an impact. And it was interesting because I posted that knowing his sense of humor and thinking that, he'll probably give some snide comment back to his computer. Mm. But there would be a part of him that would appreciate that what I was saying was actually quite right. But I also know there's a lot of my gay friends who, if I said that to, would probably be quite horrified by that comment and quite horrified by the reality of that comment.
Yeah, and actually I would say the same, because I think we can keep doing that. That's the beauty. There's nobody stopping us. And I think I'm all in favor of balance, and I would certainly never say to somebody who's an old party boy to stop partying. But yeah, I would say at least turn it down a little bit if you feel it's having an impact on other areas in your life, or if it makes you unhappy.
Exactly.
And if you spend the rest of the week feeling miserable and having no will to live basically until Thursday comes around again, then I think there is an issue there.
Yeah.
But certainly I think this is a matter of balance, and I certainly still go out. I get away with it as well, because I just tell people I'm a life coach, I can do these things. But I'm all in favor of balance for sure. And there's absolutely nobody stopping us from doing this, except for if there are bigger things that we want to achieve.
Yep.
And I guess part of my role as a coach is helping people understand, okay, well, what else is out there?
Yeah.
What is it? What's more appealing? So rather than trying to kind of push them away from a life of hedonism, it's more, okay, well, where can you be pulled towards?
What kind of behaviors do you find? You were talking about that whole life purpose idea there. For people who perhaps are feeling that existential angst of not really knowing, what their purpose is here, what they should be doing, how does that impact on them? What kind of things do you find they display as a result of that?
That's a good question, actually. It varies. Again, I tend to work with people who are, I think the phrase is, of average mental health. So I don't work with people who suffer from depression. But my guess is that certainly is one outcome, basically, of having a sense of having that sense of lack of purpose. But for most people, it just manifests in being, feeling okay, doing okay at work, doing okay in their relationships or in their personal lives more generally. But just that general sense that there must be something more. There must be more to life than this. I just want to be happy. I want to be content. But that kind of lost sense. For others, it's also it manifests into escapism. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big one, not just in the gay community, for lots of people, and finding some sense or love or connection there. I think there's a wide spectrum there of behaviors, and for other people it's a little bit more innocent. It's just general procrastination. You know, spending your evenings on Netflix. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but if you know that is all you do in the evenings, then of course it can lead to other issues. So there's a wide spectrum there, yeah. Ranging from very serious to being a bit.
Well, that's what I mean. I could imagine there'll be some people who perhaps may feel that they're in a bit of a funk or stuck, but can't put their finger on exactly what it is. And, you know, I could consider that quite an everyday expectation for people to have in some ways. It doesn't have to be about serious mental health. And yet, you know, I think talking to a coach is something that's going to truly benefit them in being able to break through that. What benefits do you think LGBT people can have, particularly about seeing a coach? What kind of issues as a general range do you get approached about to work on?
It's a broad
question, I know. Sorry.
No, there's a number of elements. I mean, I think for me, the way I look at coaching, I think it's just one element in a suite of I guess we can call them interventions. It sounds a little bit formal. That help LGBT people, I guess, lead a more happy and more fulfilled lives. Mm-hmm. There are other interventions as well. For some people, actually for most of us, I would say, an element of therapy will certainly help in terms of looking at some past traumas and things to do with our storylines and our identities. It could be counseling, it could be coaching, it could be mentorship, it could just be a really good conversation with a very good friend down the pub on a regular basis. So there's a whole spectrum of things, but I do think personal development is something that we probably need to take a little bit more serious as a community. I often say this, actually, this is one of my missions, is that I want to make personal development as talked about as personal training in the gay community. I think there's an interesting concept there around self-confidence. Like we, and again, I'm talking as a gay man now. We kind of think that the key to self-confidence is in looking better. That's one of the keys is in looking better. But actually, I think having a healthy mind and having a clear idea of who you are and where it is that you want to be going, and knowing how to do that, I think is at least as important as you know, looking and feeling good. I'm not sure if I answered your broad question there.
That's okay. And your website mentions a word that I consider to be absolutely magic: authenticity. And I guess I'm keen to find out from you, how do you interpret authenticity as being important to the LGBT community?
That's a great question. See, my definition of authenticity is always that when what you say, what you feel, and what you do are in alignment.
All aligned, yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're constantly speaking. It does mean that you're speaking your truth, but there are, of course, instances, especially at work or in social situations, where sometimes you need to put a little bit of a dimmer on that. It doesn't mean you're not being authentic. From a LGBT perspective, I guess it's about being accepting of who you are. But also by being accepting of other people in our community, and I think. Not to be all holier than thou now, but I do think that is still a bit of an issue. Also allowing other people who are maybe not necessarily express themselves the way we do, giving them space and welcoming that. For me, that's a big element of being authentic as well. Not just authentic as an individual, but authentic as a community.
And you're also talking on your website about relationship and unique attachments. As well, what kind of unique attachments do you experience with LGBT clients? You know, is there, in your experience, any unique factors that impact on LGBT relationship issues? As I said, that are unique to them.
That's a great question. I'm not sure if I would necessarily say that there are. In terms of attachment styles, there is a particular attachment style that's more prevalent among the LGBT community. I do think Certainly in my experience as a coach, that we tend to use relationships as quite a good tool for personal development. I think relationships are really good for bringing up our stuff, and often for recycling our stuff as well. It's a topic that comes up very often in my sessions, and I guess that's where it kind of strays into more of the counseling side of things rather than coaching. Attachment style is a great one. I think what I'm actually, I probably do notice in the gay community, more of a tendency towards avoidant attachers, people who are kind of a little bit afraid of attachment, and soon as somebody comes close to them, they might push them away. That kind of that push-pull movement. I think there's some really beautiful constellations I've come across as well in terms of relationships, various different types, open relationships, semi-monogamous relationships. And I think we're probably more open as a community to experiment with that because we don't necessarily have access to that heteronormative
Absolutely.
Template of what a relationship should look like, which I think is amazing. Also very challenging.
I always used to say that, I think in Australia there's the cliche of growing up and getting married and having, 2.5 kids in a suburb. I'm not quite sure how you have 0.5 of a child, but that's a whole different story. the house with the picket fence and all that sort of thing. And, there was that moment of realization I had that, being gay meant that I was almost exempt from that. I could still have that if I wanted. That was still within my world. But, that kind of expectation that, my family had for me to have that kind of went out the window. And there was a sense of liberation and freedom from that. In that, I could suddenly create what I wanted to be as well. And, my partner and I had a commitment ceremony back in 2008. And in that ceremony, I said that I was happy to have a commitment ceremony, but I didn't want it to be an imitation of a wedding. It had to be uniquely ours and created uniquely for us. And I see that being very much a reflection of what you've just said.
No, it's beautiful. And like you say, I think it's the right word. It is. It can be very liberating. I have a very dear friend who, for all intents and purposes, is a very good-looking guy, and he's a straight guy, or he identifies as straight. And the amount of times he's told me, Chris, if there was a pill I could take that would make me gay, I would take it, because you guys have so much more fun, and it's so much more easy. And it's true. I think it is. I can only speak as a gay man. I'm not sure if it's like that for other sections of the LGBTQ community, but there is the absolutely. But with that also comes
its own unique challenges and everything as well. Yeah, absolutely.
You have to kind of make your own, invent your own rules, and that requires a lot of communication. And I think that from that perspective, that's why relationships can be such a great tool for personal development, for growth.
Yeah.
If you're willing to go down that road. And again, this is no judgment, absolutely no judgment on people who in the community who decide, I'm perfectly happy with the heteronormative templates, because actually, to be honest, it's kind of, well, you could say it's proven its worth, or it's proven its non-worth, depending how you look at it, but yeah.
I guess I've always said that, there's no one-size-fits-all rule for relationships, absolutely. And ultimately it's got to come down to what works for the two or more individuals that are within it. We all have our own strengths and weaknesses and our own vulnerabilities and insecurities and shames and all that sort of thing. It's good to be able to explore these things and to step outside the comfort zone and to see how you sit within those greater schemes. But it also takes a lot of ability to be comfortable with the uncomfortable. And to discover who you are. But I think that's the same with any change process, really.
Yeah. A lot of self-reflection, you're absolutely right, because it's about identifying what your boundaries are, what your likes are, what your dislikes are. And we're talking about relationships here, but actually that's skill of being honest with yourself. Life.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This is what being assertive is all about. It's understanding what, you know, what your wants are, what your needs are, and then being able to communicate them in a way that makes everybody a winner, basically. That's non-aggressive, non-passive, and it's the same in relationships. So, yeah, so I think it's a great tool for personal development. That's not to say that you need to be in a relationship in order to grow as an individual. Absolutely not the case. But it's through other people, through our interactions with others, that we get to know ourselves as well much better.
And you know, kind of thinking about that whole idea of boundaries and understanding where our own boundaries are, how does inevitable things in life, like, you know, aging, you know, whether you're feeling lonely, your own self-perception, self-image, how does that impact on how you set your boundaries and how they develop over time?
That's a great question. They certainly do, I guess. I mean, I'm talking as somebody who now is hitting 40 this year. It depends a little bit what you mean with boundaries and in what area. I guess the great thing about getting older for me is that I feel like my boundaries are shifting. I'm way more comfortable with myself. And in that sense, I'm less boundaried. But at the same time, I'm also more boundary because I know exactly, okay, these are my red lines. This is how far you can get in terms of certain interactions and no further. And that's one of the beautiful things of getting older. So that's yeah.
I'll edit this bit out because I'm just trying to look at my own questions here and to get my own head around that. But I guess it'd be good to come back to that whole idea of, you know, when we were discussing having a chat, you were talking about seeing clients who come to you with issues around aging and self-image and loneliness. Do you think that the LGBT community are more attached to those kind of issues than non-LGBT? What kind of relationship does the LGBT community have with those particular issues from your perspective?
Yeah. I think so. And again, it's to do with I actually think, I'm not sure if I can speak from the perspective of an LGBT perspective, but I can probably speak from the perspective of a man. I think it's as men we've gotten away with it quite lightly for many decades and generations in terms of looks and aging. The moment we had our children, we became providers, and looks were no longer, you know, they were no longer part of the kind of the bargaining there. That's changing, not just for the LGBT community, but for men in general, I think, especially for the younger generation, whether they're gay or straight, they're the Tinder generation. So all of a sudden, they're no longer in the, you know, when you grew up in the 80s and the 90s, before that, it was, you know, looks were important, but it wasn't that important. But now these days, it's,
if you're not a good headless torso,
absolutely.
You've got a problem.
That's it, basically.
Yeah.
Then you're procrastination. Procreation rights all of a sudden are dwindling, and yeah, we joke about it, but it is actually it's quite
true,
sad. Really.
Yeah.
I completely lost what your question there was.
That's okay. I guess
about aging. Sorry.
Yeah, and I think even after I said that question, I thought in my head, okay, are we ultimately here looking at Peter Pan syndrome? You know, do gay men perhaps have more of a relationship with that Peter Pan syndrome than what they might be comfortable and open to admitting to?
Yeah, and again, there's something very romantic and very beautiful about a Peter Pan, but at the same time, there also comes a point that people start looking at you and think, actually, this is no longer cute.
Yeah,
this is actually, there's just very little to you as an individual if all you do is go out there and get wasted and then tell the whole world about it. Okay, fine if you do that occasionally, that's absolutely fine, of course.
Yep.
But, and again, this is just my judgment. If it's fine for you, then it should be fine for everyone. But I think for most people that come to me, they've come to a point where they realize actually there must be more to life than this.
Yep.
There must be more to life than partying, there must be more to life than sex, there must be more to life than work. What is it? Taking it back to aging now, yes, it does hit us harder because And again, sorry, I always feel like I'm speaking from the perspective of a gay man. I can't speak on behalf of any other parts of the LGBT community, but our identity is often so much built around our sexual tokens, you know. And of course, when we get older, inevitably those tokens they diminish. So how do you then? What are you replacing with?
Yeah,
is the question. There are certain things that you have an influence over. You can, you know, I guess, you can work on your body, you can work on your face for some reason. But at some point, it's almost like you have to accept the inevitable. And I think that's where it becomes important to look at other things that you have to offer in a relationship, in a sexual relationship, in an emotional relationship. Things around wisdom. It could be financial tokens, even. It could be economic capital. There's lots of different ways in which you can kind of, I guess, keep yourself the market, if I can call it like that. But psychologically, it is hard because so much of our identity has been built around our looks for a lot of us. Our bodies, our, you know, sexual prowess, all these things. So when that all of a sudden starts shifting, what do you replace it with?
So what sort of things do you do to help your clients to I guess find acceptance and to discover that purpose and perhaps begin to change it, to take the action to change the paradigm of their world?
Yeah, a lot of it is around questions. It's around, even talking back about authenticity, who are you? Now, what's really beneath there? What are your values? What are the things in your life that you find are most important? And a lot of people, of course, we all have them. We all have our core values, but most people aren't actually necessarily aware of what they are, though they are the driving forces behind our whole behavior. So if you're somebody who craves security, then often that will manifest as financial security. So most of what you do will be based around, you know, making sure that you achieve that security, or it could be independence, or it could be connection, or it could be whatever. A lot of my role is really be that person that helps them unpack what those values are, but then also looking ahead at the future. But where is it that you want to be in 5 years' time, in 10 years' time? What's the vision that you want to create for yourself? And then be very specific about that, because a lot of the questions I get is, well, how do I become more? I just want to be more happy. I want to be more content. Okay, but what does contentment, what does happiness, what does it actually look like?
Yeah.
Can we be more specific about that? What are the kind of material things that you need to see in place for you to generate that sense or that feeling of contentment? You know, is it a big house by the sea? Is it a you know, some sports car? I'm making it up now. Hopefully not. What are the kind of things you need to do then in order to have those things? And most importantly, who's the kind of person you need to be right now in order to have those things in 5 years' time, in 10 years' time? So that's how we then unpack that. So it's very future focused, the work I do, unlike the work of a therapist, which is much more around, okay, well, you know, what's going on here? What are kind of the underlying emotions, and why are they there?
And this is, of course, a vast generalized question here, in a sense that, you know, it's how long is a piece of string, I guess. But, you know, on average, how many sessions do people have to work with you in order to begin to feel at least a benefit of you know, what it is that they're being troubled by or concerned by?
It depends. Not so long, often. I always have this, ever since I started coaching, I always had this thing in my head that I like people to come away with at least one or two aha moments every time they have a session. And it might be small ones, but just having a space of an hour of being able to look at a particular topic and then really unpack that. What does that mean? What does that look like specifically, you know, et cetera. Usually in a session, if you talk about a specific topic, you can actually make quite a bit of progress. I don't tend to work with people in the long term, meaning we'll have 5 sessions, we'll have 10 sessions, and then usually it peters off a little bit. So in the beginning, I tend to work with somebody on a weekly basis because that keeps the momentum. After that, after about 5 sessions or so, it tends to be every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks. And then from then onwards, it becomes maybe every month, every 2 months. Yeah. Because my role as a coach has changed. It's no longer about, you know, what does the future look like and how do I get there? it's more as an accountability partner. Yeah. So just being that person that's there to check in, they can check in with. I act as a coach. We call it a forcing function. Mm-hmm. So if you set yourself a goal and you tell somebody about it, you're much more likely to achieve that goal than if you just keep it to yourself. Mm. So I'm then that person who, you know, cracks the whip, as I said earlier. But it's not a long term. It's not like with therapy, for example, where some people, you know, you know that's a long term relationship, 1 year, 2 years, 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, sometimes beyond that even. It's not like that with coaching. It can be, but you know, you kind of run out of things to say after a while. So,
what led you to actually go down this line of work?
I had a really amazing coach myself. I had a bit of a crunch point in 2012 when, you know, when just everything comes together in a wonderfully chaotic way. Problems at work, problems with health, problems in relationship, and just no way out, basically. And then I came across this coach of mine, dear friend of mine, Michelle Zully, and I worked with her for quite a long time, actually. Interestingly, I did work for her for the long term. And one of the things that I realized was that I kind of realized it already, but I just hadn't acknowledged it, as I was very unhappy in my career. I was working as a lobbyist, so I was in politics for a very long time. And my purpose was always to make a difference, to make a change. And I think I realized through the work I did with her that in the 10 years that I'd been a lobbyist and I worked in parliament, there was literally nothing I could point at. And I guess say I did that. Yeah. This is because of what I did, which, you know, it's important to feel like that sometimes. You know, we all want to feel significant, and I felt very insignificant in my career. But I also knew that I always wanted to work with people on a one-to-one basis. That's what I'm good at. So it took me a little while to acknowledge it, and it was certainly with her encouragement as well to actually realize, oh, maybe I would like to be a coach. But then to get from that idea of I want to be a coach to actually becoming a coach, that was a whole journey in itself, filled with, you know, insecurities and a lot of training, of course, as well, and a lot of kind of having to put myself in situations where I was very uncomfortable. Now I've been a full-time coach for 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. And it's been great. It's a really, really great experience. I still have my challenges, especially in terms of putting myself out there.
Yeah.
I'm very comfortable still with the one-on-one work, but I want to do more group work, and that for me, that's a big one. Mm-hmm. So I keep putting myself in situations where I have to do that, force myself. Something like this as well is always an interesting one.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of my own journey, it's been really great. It's a big privilege actually to be on the receiving end of seeing people going like, oh, I hadn't thought about it, or I hadn't looked at it this way, and then hearing of success stories as well. So,
and I guess
it's a great job.
I always like to ask any of the guests that come on to Outthink, you know, if there's, you know, one piece of advice or one. You know, nugget, gem that you can offer any listeners here that is potentially going to help them to make even that tiniest shift that sometimes they need to move towards where they need to go to. You know, what kind of advice would you give someone?
There are so many phrases that are
there's so many places you right can now. Start. I'm the king of the really broad questions. So.
No, but this is a really good question actually, because the one that's coming back to me that I feel speaks to me right now is, I always advise people to take responsibility for everything that happens in their own lives, and to take accountability for that. And I know it sounds easy, but actually sometimes it's quite hard.
It's really hard, yeah.
Because it's so easy and so tempting to play the victim, and you forget that actually, instead of saying, well, why is this happening to me, ask yourself, well, how did I attract this?
Yeah.
It's the same thing, but it's a much more empowering way of looking at life. So that's just, I guess that's a very generic, but really, it's a snippet that I still need to remind myself of occasionally as well.
Yeah.
But always take accountability. That doesn't mean blame.
No, it doesn't. It's completely different again. It's just accepting your place or your involvement, your participation in whatever it is that is happening in your life.
Yeah, because if you if you get yourself out of the victimhood and you turn yourself into into being in control, then you also realize, well, you've got the tools basically to change the situation. Mm. It's just about finding them and then being able to use them. Yeah. And having some courage, I guess, as well. So that's the one that came to mind. The other one, sorry, I'm going to give you two.
Great.
It's a quote by Tony Robbins, but I really love it, which is that your life is a reflection of the shit that you're willing to tolerate. Forgive me for swearing.
That's fine.
So if you're, you know, if some of your reasoners, your listeners are thinking, actually, I'm feeling a little bit socially isolated, then again, it's about that, taking that responsibility and saying, well, I'm feeling socially isolated because I have allowed myself to have different priorities in my life. Yeah. And that's a little bit annoying to understand and to realize that, but it's also quite liberating because it means that you have the tools to change that as well.
I think, liberation is often on the other side of confrontation.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I think if they're confronted by it first, they need to recognize what it is that's causing that within them. And then once they figure that out, it can often be very liberating.
Yeah.
And most importantly, if people wanted to get in touch with you and to do some work with you, how could they go about doing that?
Oh, they can just drop me an email, or I don't know if you can have a look at my website. It's just chrisverde.com. And people who are interested in working with me, I always give them a free session. So it's a little bit of a self-promotion there. But for me, it's very important because I don't work with anybody. I need to make sure that it's somebody that I click with, that I connect with. And that's very important in a relationship. There are certain people who don't particularly like my style, and that's fine. They like a hardcore,
Taskmaster
PT style, and my style is very different. I like to keep it light. I like to use humor. For some people, that works. For other people, no, they need something a little bit more strict. That's absolutely fine. So that's always my approach. I speak to people first. Can I help? And is there a connection? And of course, is coaching the right approach for them? Because for some people, as I said, it might be. Actually, they would be better off having a longer term conversation with somebody who's a therapist or a counselor.
Absolutely, I think that's often the difference between mental health and mental wellness. In a sense,
absolutely.
That I think what you do is really about that mental wellness, about making sure that you know you're not only maintain but build upon that mental health and to be able to exceed even what your own expectations are.
Yeah, I think it's a really great phrase, actually. That's absolutely spot on. It is the difference between mental health and mental wellness. I might use that.
No problem. All yours. Look, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.